Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and we shine a light forward to where evolution might be taking us. Well, you know, in these days, it's getting more and more challenging to discern real news from fake news, not to mention real fake news from fake news. And the word truth has really devolved into little more than whatever seems to agree with what we already believe. But as my friend Jacob Lieberman told me recently, when you go to the thesaurus, one of the antonyms for belief is truth. In other words, truth can be considered the opposite of belief. At a time when conspiracy theories proliferate, and when the alt-right side, it seems like everything is a conspiracy, and for the secular left, it seems like pretty much nothing is, maybe it's time for some deeper wisdom and higher perspective. So our guest this week is Mark Rabinowitz, and he is going to help us clear the air and maybe even the airwaves. Mark is a writer and a researcher who focuses on the intersection of deep politics and deep ecology. He runs several websites, including oilempire.us, a political map, peakchoice.org, cooperation or collapse, and jfkmoon.org about President Kennedy's call to end the Cold War and convert the moon race to a joint U.S.-Soviet mission. Did you know about that? You probably didn't. This is going to be a session about many things that we that are provable facts that we don't know, and perhaps maybe even why we don't know them. So I would really highly recommend that when the interview is over, you check out some of these websites that Mark has put up, because they're all really great for learning to recognize the difference between the spun story and a likelier truth. So Mark is based in Eugene, Oregon, where he practices permaculture and encourages relocalization as a community response to what he calls peak everything. I have long appreciated Mark's ability to cut through BS, speak truth about the unspeakable, and help other people be more discriminating and discerning. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you for the invitation, and I've always appreciated your ability to take disturbing material and give a humorous spin as well.
Well, good. Let's start talking about disturbing information. Let's begin with the term conspiracy theory. We keep hearing that term a lot. How and why did this term come into use, Mark?
Well, the term conspiracy theory, which has become a general epithet against anything that officialdom does not like, was popularized in 1967 by a memo from the Central Intelligence Agency, which has been declassified, made public, that called on CIA media assets to ridicule people such as ourselves who disbelieved in the Warren Commission, which said that Lee Harvey Oswald killed President Kennedy all by his lonesome. Now, the term conspiracy theory has morphed and metastasized into a general yeah type of approach against anything that sounds vaguely discomforting, whether it's authentic scandal that deserves discussion or ridiculous nonsense. And often the tactic behind the conspiracy theory smear label is to mix the real and ridiculous together. So if you don't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone gunman in Dallas, you also must believe the Earth is flat and the Holocaust never happened and you saw aliens in your breakfast cornflakes this morning and similar things. And it's a very effective psychological tactic because who wants to be associated with people who say we didn't land on the moon or the Earth is flat and so forth?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You, of course, you mentioned the Kennedy assassination, and that is the watermark event of our lifetimes, even if we were just a little baby when that happened, like you probably were. You turned me on to a book that gave me what I think is the clearest and likeliest story about the JFK assassination. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters by James Douglas. Can you tell us a little bit more about that book and why it stands out from all of the other dozens and dozens of books written about the Kennedy assassination?
Well, you could probably fill a small library with all the books that have been written on the removal of President Kennedy from office. But most of them focus on the microanalysis of the evidence, how many bullets were fired, or claims that are difficult to prove, from a variety of perspectives, both official and conspiratorial. What Douglas's book does instead is it focuses as much on the motive, why President Kennedy was removed from office. And the answer is he was shifting American foreign policy in numerous places, but the three most important were the nuclear arms race with the Soviet Union, Cuba, and Vietnam. He signed the first treaty to limit the nuclear arms race a few months before he was killed to stop atmospheric nuclear tests. He was negotiating restarting diplomatic relations with Cuba when he was killed, and he had also signed an order to withdraw, to start the withdrawal of troops from Vietnam, literally the month before he was killed. Now, what would the 60s have been if these policies had happened, if the Cold War had ended, if we had normalized relations with Cuba, and if the war on Vietnam had ended in Kennedy's second term? Would we have used the resources for endless war for other purposes? Now, this book has sold extremely well. It's even now endorsed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but it has gotten no media attention hardly at all anywhere. And this is not just in the mainstream press like CBS and the Washington Post and the rest, but it even has found it difficult to get mentioned by The Nation and Mother Jones. Democracy Now! Turned down an interview with the author, even though he is a longtime peace activist dating back to the mid-60s.
So why do you so I mean, maybe the answer should be obvious to everyone, but I can understand why the Washington Post in mainstream media would shy away from this horrific notion that elements in our own government killed our president and killed the president because he was making peace and not war. What about the alternative left? What about Mother Jones and Democracy Now! And Noam Chomsky and people like that?
Well, there's a variety of explanations. To be fair, most of those experts are hesitant to explain the reason for their, to put it politely, self-censorship. But there's a number of factors that can be discerned. One is there's a number of leftists who find it difficult to believe that a rich person, such as John Kennedy, could have become a class traitor, standing up to Wall Street, standing up to the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex. You also have others who think that this violates their socialist or Marxist view of the world, that a great man can't change something, that it's only the power of the working people who are going to overthrow the system and bring about some glorious utopia. You also have a couple of members of the alternative left who are dependent on foundation funding, which comes from conservative sources. But I think the most important reason is to acknowledge that the military-industrial complex changed the path of our government is very disturbing, not just to the official story, but it's disturbing to the alternative left or mainstream left, and it changes our view of what is politically possible.
Exactly, exactly. I'm going to change direction for just a few minutes before we go back to those kinds of perpetrations. I'm curious, as I'm always curious about how people find their calling. What was it in your life and experience that caused you to follow this path of, perhaps an unpopular path of looking to discern truth when many, many forces in our society would much rather look the other way?
Well, it evolved over years and decades, as it does for anybody. My political awakening, I would date to Three Mile Island in 1979, the nuclear partial meltdown. I was a teenager at the time. And shortly afterwards, Ronald Reagan escalating the nuclear arms race. And it was for trying to understand why governments would aim hydrogen bombs at cities and what led to that and why we tolerate such behavior from most of the major governments in the world, not just the United States, that led me to understand the history of the what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex.
You know, it's very interesting that, some people will look at these things and turn the other way. How did this turn into, dare I call it a career?
Well, I learned too much about it, and I went through what I call the one-way door of uncomfortable knowledge, where once you learn too much about it, you can't go back. And I think most people in our society have a sense that these deeply troubling things are going on, but to confront it directly is a psychological journey that there's not a lot of helping hands to guide you along the way.
That's true. Well, did you find some helping hands? Did you find some, what kinds of communities did you find that would be open to your probing and where you'd feel comfortable in seeking as well as speaking the truth?
Well, there's the peace movements and anti-nuclear movements, but they are not that easy to find for most people. You have, with Kennedy, you have the JFK research community, but that's very small and bitterly divided into factions, unfortunately. And there's not much cross-pollinization between these different movements. You have civil rights efforts. You have all sorts of other movements, but they have not even come close to their potential and are inadequate for being a complete assistance to help people through this perilous journey.
You know, one of the things that I found most interesting and valuable about James Douglas's book is that really, in a certain regard, it's a spiritual, if not religious, journey. He's a Catholic. He was influenced by Thomas Merton, who apparently actually came up with the term the unspeakable to describe what he perceived as going on in this country after we defeated the Nazis in World War II, and then taking on the Nazi scientists, experiments, and so on. I think having that fundamental spiritual perspective allows us to look truth in the eye a little bit more courageously. Does that make sense?
It does, and it gets us also past the partisan divides, Democrat, Republican, left, right, back and forth, because the issues around the arms race and whether we're going to use our collective talents of civilization for peace or for destruction affect everybody. We don't all have to agree on every piece of philosophy, but we're all on Spaceship Earth together. And that's one reason I really respect the perspective of your show, because the more we learn to transcend those kind of divides, the more likely it is that humanity will continue.
Yeah, you have a wonderful term that I want to grab onto it. You call it Mobius politics. What do you mean by Mobius politics?
Well, a Mobius strip is an interesting feature in geometry. If you have a loop of paper, it has two sides. If you give one side a half twist before making the loop, presto, it only has one side. It's the illusion of two sides. And our political system uses the illusion of two sides. In one way, the two corporate parties are both controlled by big money and big power. But on a more planetary consciousness perspective, there is only one side. There's no lifeboat for spaceship Earth. We're all in it together.
And that's right. And it's really interesting. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the other elephant and donkey in the living room, the assassination of Martin Luther King. And we'll also talk some more about how we can be more discerning in all of these matters. So this is really interesting, and I really appreciate your perspective. And I think one thing that's allowed you to go deeper is cultivating a higher and deeper perspective of looking at it not just from the historical situation, but also from our political, from our spiritual traditions, and so on. And I think that's going to be very, very helpful. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We should be taking a break in just a very, very short minute. Ah, here we go.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Imagine, it is the year 2039. A single corporation controls most of the world through genetic modification, food, and drugs. A senior geneticist's lover dies, launching him on a quest to take down the psychopathic CEO and the handful of elite families that control the corporation. The feature film Corporate Prey, based on the novel of the same name, points us toward a dystopian future where we seem to be headed. Huge corporations do largely control our farms and our pharma, and wealthy elites seem to be operating to the detriment of most humans. Can we reverse course? Can prophecy lead to prevention? Can a movie awaken enough of us in time? To find out more and how you can help bring this enlightening film to light, go to CorporatePrey.com. Corporate Prey. That's P-R-E-Y.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket. A tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman back with Mark Rabinowitz. We're talking about conspiracy theories. We're talking about discerning the truth in the midst of misinformation, missing information, disinformation. I wanted to talk about another perpetration which hasn't gotten its full exposure, and that is the assassination of Martin Luther King. And as most people don't know, there was a court case in Memphis, Tennessee, in, I believe it was 1999, where an attorney, William Pepper, actually proved to a jury that Martin Luther King's assassination was carried out by a conspiracy of our own government, the Memphis police, I believe the mafia, the CIA, and not James Earl Ray. What can you tell us about that story, Mark?
Well, the King family, after a number of years, came to doubt that James Earl Ray had actually been the perpetrator, and they asked a family friend, William Pepper, who had known Martin Luther King, and helped persuade him to take a stronger stand against the war in Vietnam, to look into it. They tried to get Ray to have a trial. Ray actually never had a trial after being arrested, but he was stonewalled by the state of Tennessee, and he never got a trial, and he passed away in prison. So the family and their attorney, Pepper, filed a lawsuit in Memphis in federal court. After 3 weeks of testimony, which is on the KingCenter.org website, Martin Luther King Center in Atlanta, a jury found for the family in 1 hour of deliberation. They said it was cut and dried. There was really no question what had happened. Now, unfortunately, this got a brief mention in the media, and then it disappeared down the Orwellian memory hole since, and hardly anybody, even lots of civil rights activists, have not heard of this trial, at least from my own experience of being a pest and asking people if they know about it. Next month is the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, April 4, 1968, and I have been unable, searching around the country, to find any of the mainstream commemorations of this tragedy that mention what the King family found in their lawsuit. The motive, of course, was that a year before, King had made a very strong statement against the war in Vietnam at Riverside Church in New York City in a speech called Beyond Vietnam. That speech has gotten a little more attention, but that it was the motive for his removal from politics has gotten less attention. King was also organizing something called the Poor People's Campaign, which was to be a march on Washington, except this time it was not intended to march around for the day, listen to speeches, and then go home. The participants were planning to camp in downtown Washington until they got the political system to respond for their call for economic justice. And that was seen as extremely dangerous by people like J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI, and so the King had to go.
You know, it's interesting. The Poor People's Campaign actually did happen. That was my first year teaching in Washington, D.C., and in our little house with five roommates, we had people camping on our floor who had come for the Poor People's Campaign, but obviously, as much as we remember Martin Luther King, we don't remember Ralph Abernathy, who was his successor, you know, a lot less charismatic. But the Poor People's Campaign did move forward. What I'm obviously hearing, the same pattern is true, that both Martin Luther King and JFK touched that third rail of messing with the military-industrial complex and messing with the military and the dominance of that particular approach. We were just, again, he was speaking out against the war in Vietnam, and I think that that might have been perhaps what most made the difference. I know that William Pepper, in his book, talked about the concerns that the law and order people had about you know, the Poor People's Campaign and rioting and all that sort of stuff. I think my personal view is that that was rather generous of him. But here we have two instances that we've lived with go ahead, Mark.
Well, and another factor behind that is those who conspired to perpetrate these crimes risked playing what the casino people would call double or nothing. If what they had done had been exposed by the media and the political system, their point of view would have been discredited in ways that are difficult to imagine now. I recommend an article from Carl Bernstein, the Washington Post reporter who was involved in exposing Watergate. In 1977, he wrote an article called The CIA and the Media in Rolling Stone magazine, where he documented that nearly all of the major media, newspaper, radio, TV, etc., had editors or publishers or other senior staff who were compromised by the Central Intelligence Agency. And so without that sort of infiltration into the media, it would have been more risky for the Kennedy assassins or other deep crime conspirators to engage in such behavior. Because if the media were to point out that, no, the lone gunman story in Dallas is not true, and that this is what actually happened, or as best as we can figure out, they would not have been able to get away with it. And that pattern continues to this day. I mean, when there was the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination in 2013, there was no media, hardly anywhere in the country, that gave even token respectful treatment to the paradigm that the Warren Commission was a cover-up.
Yeah, and one of the important pieces that I got from the James Douglas book is that he said that at the time of the Kennedy assassination in 1963, the CIA, confirming what Carl Bernstein had said, the CIA had assets in just about every institution in American society. So in just, we'll call it 15 or 16 years, since the establishment of the CIA, they were able to gain that level of infiltration into these otherwise secular, non-military civilian institutions. And I'm sure that the people who they recruited thought that they were being patriots. They thought that they were supporting something. They were helping to defend their country. Yeah, can you say any more about that?
Well, not all the rank-and-file people would have been involved in such a thing. These types of covert operations are what's called compartmentalized. Participants have a, quote, need to know about their piece of the puzzle and might not know the big picture. But one of the most important people on the Warren Commission, which supposedly investigated what happened to Kennedy, was Alan Dulles, who had been the CIA director fired by Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs disaster in 1961. He actually lobbied to be on the commission when most of the participants, including Earl Warren, had to be drag-kicking and screaming to participate in this thing. And an analogy I like is if you have a violent argument with your neighbor and then the next day you wind up murdered, and then your neighbor you had the argument with is appointed to head the investigation, most people would find that difficult to accept. And that's essentially what happened with the Warren Commission. But the price of disbelieving that is a rejection of the civics lesson that we all got in grade school, that we're this wonderful democracy and the best of all possible worlds, and it requires us to consider that our society is a little different than we've been taught. And that requires a bit of maturity in our discernment. But it also opens up the possibility to to being thrown off course by claims that appear true or have partial truths in them, but are intended to misdirect.
Yes, and that really seems to have been what's populated much of, well, let's take, for example, the 9/11 truth movement. You were a part of that, at least at some point. What can you say about that? And you know, some of the same parallels occurred in the way that the 9/11 story was treated after it happened, and the way that the JFK story was treated, in terms of witnesses being persuaded to change their testimony, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they both fit a pattern where you have the official story, you have a various fallbacks to the official story. Richard Nixon called that the limited hangout, where you let out a piece of truth and then the recipient thinks that's the whole story, but it is not. You have the best evidence, which sometimes is difficult at best to discern. There's a number of claims that might fit a maybe category, maybe true, maybe not. And then you have a whole micro universe of disinformation claims that are either partially or totally untrue. You can have a real conclusion, but a false claim. So this was tested with the Kennedy assassination cover-up. There is a whole cottage industry of false and misleading claims. For example, there are people who claim that George H.W. Bush, the future president, was in Dallas that day, even though he was 100 miles away in another town. Excuse me. I certainly don't want to make apologies for George H.W. Bush, but he wasn't in Dallas that day, even if you can read this on the internet. You can read that the limo driver shot JFK based on blurry pictures, but that's also incorrect. With 9/11, there's also all sorts of bizarre and fanciful science fiction stories. My favorite is the one that the plane crashes didn't happen, that missiles were fired at the buildings, and that George Bush's buddies blew up the towers, even though the firefighters watched the towers buckling before they came down. And meanwhile, very good evidence about the suppression of warnings that the attacks were about to happen, that the rank and file at the CIA, Defense Intelligence, and FBI tried to stop the attacks, or the various war game exercises simulating the attacks during the attacks. Bits of these best evidences have been in mainstream publications, but they have not connected the dots to show a deliberate pattern to allow them to happen.
I've always found it to be quite, as we call them, coincidence theorists. We'd have a field day with the idea that by some strange coincidence, and this, as you say, this is provable, there is best evidence for this, that on the day of the attacks, there was a war game taking place that simulated the attacks. And so that would indicate that unless we're dealing in a universe of tremendously negative synchronicities, that it was likely that somebody involved with the attackers knew that was going to happen, planned the attacks at that day. And if we look at the timeline accounts of what happened, we see that, that's blatantly obvious in the timeline accounts. And yet those are the things that have been, because they're less glamorous than the idea that, well, really no plane hit the Pentagon, or that, you know, the buildings were brought down deliberately through demolition. Those kinds of things are much more glamorous than, by the way, there was a simulation going on at the exact same time by some coincidence.
And I think part of that's also related to our steady diet of science fiction films from Hollywood and television that have emphasized flashiness over critical thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have to wonder, like all the people who wonder, well, was it's a certain percentage of people who actually probably believed that the moon landing was actually staged. And so if we have artificial intelligence and simulated things happening, that sleight of hand, sleight of film, that it becomes very terrifying for people to imagine that information can be manipulated at that level. And my experience is that the more fearful people become, the less discerning they are, and the more susceptible they are to whatever it is that that feeds their fear.
Well, it also becomes sort of a parlor game. Did the Air Force murder the butler with the candlestick, or it's some big Agatha Christie story or some X-Files, and it becomes a form of perverse entertainment rather than a somewhat serious view of what's going on in our society.
Yeah,
so it becomes harmless.
It becomes what?
Harmless.
Right.
So if people want to believe that aliens piloted a missile into the side of the Pentagon, you're free to believe that. But it has absolutely no potential for changing the system that allowed such attacks to happen.
Yes, that's certainly true. And we call them weapons of mass distraction, and people are massively distracted. When we get back after the next break, we're going to talk about some of the things that have been happening in the last several years, and particularly the information presented by the alt-right in this last election. We'll be back with Mark Rabinowitz after this break.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
I rescued Toast from a shelter in 2011. I love Toast because she's a lazy diva. Toast does whatever she wants, obviously. She's sleeping right now. She's so loving. She's so comforting. When I walked into the shelter, I knew right then that she was special.
Toast, Instagram star and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Start yours today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Hi, Steve Behrman. We're back with our guest, Mark Rabinowitz. We're talking about the various conspiracies and perceptions of conspiracies and how we can be more discerning and see the meta patterns behind all of these things. You know, in this past so-called election that we had, there's been a lot of talk about Soviet Russian interference in the election, and there's also been a lot of disinformation that was that was perpetrated to kind of fog the issue. And I'm also thinking about I know some people who were otherwise progressive and forward thinking, but who voted for Donald Trump because they thought that he was going to expose the pedophile elites and thus bring down the deep state. Can you tell us more about that and the Pizzagate and those kinds of conspiracy ideas that have been circulating? What's the truth to them and what's the non-truth?
Well, it's not a coincidence that the National Enquirer tabloid is vehemently pro-Trump and has been aggressive in throwing poop on a wall in his defense. Whatever truths or slivers of truth there may be behind elite sexual scandals, the Pizzagate story was more worthy of a story in the National Enquirer than a serious effort for accountability. But when these sorts of stories become a form of mean-spirited entertainment, it doesn't matter if they're true or false or somewhere in between. All that matters is that it provokes an anger reaction. Now, both sides in that election were using anger and fear, the greater of evils rather than the greaters of goods. But these efforts are basically designed what the Army used to call psychological warfare. So rather than argue why you don't like Hillary Clinton as a candidate in a rational way, saying you don't like her connections to toxic waste industries or her foreign policy disasters or authentic corruption scandals, it's much better for the Trump people to say, oh, well, they're molesting kids in the non-existent basement of a restaurant owned by some Democratic Party people in Washington. I know a couple people also who believed that, and I would suggest to them, well, can you provide any actual evidence for this? And of course not. And what little bits they believe are websites and alt-right personalities who all reference each other rather than any sort of actual investigation. And it's part of the dumbing down of the culture, which has been underway for a lot longer than just Donald Trump. He's a reflection of that, not the instigator.
Right. There has been a stupidization program going on for quite a while. And we can also see that what's going on now, what's happened in the last several months, is that YouTube has shut down a number of sites that have allegedly been, promoting this disinformation. And, some of the sites actually promote valuable information about the dangers of vaccination, about the dangers of GMOs, et cetera, et cetera. So, but because they're also bought into the Alex Jones narratives of, I think it was not so much about Parkland shooting, but about the one in the north and Sandy Hook, though those are all actors. Those are actors who create that. And there's a large percentage of people who believe that because their side seems to believe that.
Well, I'm skeptical that a really large number of people believe the crisis actors story. My guess is it's a lot like the claim we never went to the moon or the earth is flat or the Holocaust didn't happen, where some people authentically might believe those things, but it's more important that they have a public presence so that they can be used to tar any suggestion that any official story is incorrect.
So how can we be more discerning? And by the way, I have to tell people once again to check out Mark's websites, particularly the one that I have always found valuable, oilempire.us, where you talk about the official story, the limited hangout, best evidence, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I think I have always found it useful to look at those categories to help balance my perspective. But how can people in general be more discerning about these things?
Well, I strongly recommend the word maybe. When you are sitting at your desk thousands of miles away from where something happened, you will have limited ability to fact check anything. You mentioned YouTube. In the months after 9/11, there was a lot of information from the wilderness, was one of the sites, Cooperative Research, now History Commons was another, where the various dots began to be connected, showing that the Cheney White House absolutely knew the attacks were imminent and about to happen, and who, what, where, when. So I would tell people, the truth is on the internet. And after a couple of years, that truth was drowned out by numerous other efforts, taking a true conclusion of complicity, but polluting it with false claims, to the point that if you go on YouTube and search for 9/11 or many of these other scandals, most of what will pop up is insulting to anyone's intelligence. In terms of what would help us be better at discernment, a little humility goes a long way. The ability to check your sources and check your sources' sources helps as well. A small amount of high school science sometimes helps. say, oh, well, this happened or that happened, and it just flatly contradicts almost any sense. And having a broader perspective. One of the things that I like about the Jim Douglas book that you mentioned is it delves into some of the details of the mechanics of how Kennedy was removed from the presidency. But what's more important is the motive, the big picture. If you want to microanalyze all the evidence on these types of scandals, go ahead. You can spend your whole life. That might be productive. It might be a waste of time, probably somewhere in between. But the real story is the why, not the how. Why was Kennedy removed from the presidency? Because he was trying to turn off the war machine and shift course for civilization. Why was 9/11 allowed to happen? Without that, there's no way Bush and Cheney could have gone into Iraq because of the psychological shock, the trauma of the event. Why is usually more important than how, and that is where pulling ourselves into conspiracy literacy, as opposed to theory and questions and speculation and hoaxes and denial, might have more productivity. Another paradigm I strongly support is truth and reconciliation. In South Africa after apartheid, there was a moderate civil war going underway, and Nelson Mandela, as the new president, realized he was going to have an ungovernable country. So he and, in particular, Desmond Tutu, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, set up a Truth and Reconciliation Commission where perpetrators of extreme violence were given amnesty if they were willing to tell all in public, in front of a television camera in a court. It's not a perfect process. It didn't solve all their problems in their society. It had opponents on all sides as well, but I'd love to hear of a better idea. Now, after dictatorships in a number of countries, they've tried to do prosecution of torturers and various other human rights abusers. Some have worked well, some haven't. But transcending the us versus them, the punishment and retribution approach, might be a way out to shift from endless warfare towards a global consciousness that we need to survive.
Yeah, I really am a great supporter and advocate of the truth and reconciliation idea, because it elevates the idea of completing the past rather than simply going back into the past and reliving the past. And so much of what you call, you know, Mobius politics is really on the field of the old battlefield, where the two sides are duking it out. Each side sees the shadow of the other side very, very clearly, and sees their own shadow not very clearly at all. And so what this has done, I mean, I look at it as divide and conquer tactics, where the populace is divided into two warring cultural camps so that they can't really agree on the rules of decency and governance that the 90% of us who are not sociopaths would want to have. In terms of moving toward that that kind of truth and reconciliation and awareness, do you have any ideas or anything that you're seeing out there that would indicate that's a good direction to go in?
It's difficult to imagine how that could happen given how polarized our society is, but the traditional approaches of investigation and prosecution and faith-based election machines that might or might not reflect the will of the voter, these are not working so well. And they're not working well for conservatives as well as liberals or progressives or libertarians. Nobody's really happy with what's going on. And the whole my side versus your side, we have to defeat you in November, we have much bigger problems on this planet than how to collect the garbage and who's going to be the dog catcher and so forth. We are at a time of mass extinction, of overshoot, overpopulation, overconsumption, and it's getting crowded and tense. And yet we know how to use the resources for war towards our collective survival, but these are not dominant paradigms really in any culture, especially the United States of amnesia, as Gore Vidal put it. So maybe if there was more awareness that we're all here on Spaceship Earth together, that there's no escape boat. We're not going to go live with Elon Musk in a colony on Mars. That's fantasy, to be polite. Perhaps that would allow us to transcend some of the ideological differences that keep this outcome from happening.
You know, there's that quote. It seems like there, that right now, you know, again, the more fear there is, the more people tend to want to hunker in the bunker with what they're familiar with. And yet, at the same time, I see that, you know, the Parkland shooting, as an example, it kind of was a wake up for teenagers going, what kind of world is this? Why is it that people can buy weapons of mass destruction personally to be able to use? I mean, if you read any of the pieces about what happens to people who are shot by assault rifles, they get their insides completely torn up. It's not like, well, a bullet went through the lung. It's not like that. It's like everything is blown up. The only purpose of it possibly could be to kill many people at the same time, or have that as a threat of killing many people at the same time. So do you see any kind of awakening in young people about these kinds of things?
Well, they are expressing that they don't want the future that's been arranged for them, whether it's violence in the schools, violence between countries, climate change, resource depletion, pollution, you name it, they realize that their future has been stolen from them by the adults. There's a Mobius meme I like, is the oil wells are half full and half empty. It's getting better and worse at the same time.
Yeah.
So if you want to just focus on our ability to cooperate and understand we're all one and figure out ways to grow food without destroying the world, we have incredible knowledge on that. If you want to focus solely on the negatives that are going on in the world, in Syria and Yemen and so forth, there's no shortage of that too, and they're both happening at the same time. So we're sort of bipolar in our civilization, which we're going to choose, and we're choosing both at the same time. Now, I'm not someone who thinks things need to get worse to get better, but the extreme aspect of Trump and his administration is certainly a wake-up call that if we keep going down this road, we'll get there. So let's change course and figure out how we can use our talents for life instead of collective death. And I think most people on the planet get that. Probably even most Republicans get that. And if we can turn off some of the shouting and name-calling, this may be seen as a transformative time where we finally worked out how to live together.
Yeah, I think, of course, there's no guarantees. As you said, that magical word, maybe, but maybe is a word that has possibilities. And I think that the truth and reconciliation idea is excellent because you can't heal what you're not familiar with. Mark Rabinowitz, it's been a fabulous pleasure talking with you. It's been very enlightening. I know people got a lot out of it. We are going to have you back for another conversation at some point. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. We'll talk with you next week.